I fear the day that technology will surpass our human interaction. The world will have a generation of idiots. This quote comes from the one and only Albert Einstein. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Raleigh.
And this is Unstuck, the special ed podcast.
Wow. Wow. We are on a roll today.
Yep.
Well, we're back. We're back and we're rusty, but we're back.
We're here. We're here and we're clear to record this for the second time.
Okay.
Because we already missed technology.
The technology
bailed on us and the first 15 minutes are gone. So sorry, everyone. It was our best work ever.
Part of me wonders if we had used a different quote from a different genius slash person with clear autism, would we have maybe been better off? And that would be the one and only Kip Dynamite. His wedding song. Yes, I love technology, but not as much as you see, but I still love technology. I'm not going to sing it, but I think if you've all seen the movie Napoleon Dynamite and you wait till the end when he's on the horse.
Can you hum a little bit? Because I need a reminder. Just not more than 3 seconds, because I think that's where the royalty fees come into play. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
sure.
know. I don't know what the law
is. I'm sure someone's coming after us for
that. I also was telling Raleigh that I had no idea that Kip and Napoleon's real last name was Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, just very interesting. Yeah. So, I've been hibernating for the past few months. What have you been doing?
So I have lent my voice to a recording, of greetings for a really, really fantastic salon in Connecticut. Salon Nathaniel gets a shout out. If you're in the tri-state area, drop by, visit, or if you just want to hear me tell you the hours they're open, call up and wait for that recording.
Well, and I heard there might be some added flavor to it at some point where you may have to record a second time for some additional information.
Possibly, but there was concern about how much it was costing with having two systems, so we're just going with what they're going with what they've got now. And however I recorded it.
Well, perhaps there are listeners out there that really want and need for their business someone to record a phone call.
Well,
I mean, a voicemail.
I'm your lady for that, if you need it.
Any other jobs or chores?
I mean, maybe an audiobook here or there.
All right. Penguin House, if you're listening. that's a publishing company.
Sure, I don't know.
Penguin Books?
I don't know.
I think it's a child company.
That'd be great.
If you're looking for, could you do a high-pitched youth voice?
No. So my octave is not really super high. Yes. I can give inflection, though. I can speak with inflection, and I can give a little personality and character to the character.
It's why you can rap Jay-Z at karaoke, sing
correct
Mariah Carey.
Yeah. Or okay. Sing Alicia Keys while I rap Jay-Z. Yeah,
that's
I can't
fair.
Do it. Yeah.
Or that's probably a better option. So. Yeah, so today we're here to talk about technology.
So two people who are putting references in from 20 years ago are going to talk to you about technology.
And also who just messed up their first round of the podcast are going to talk to you about technology. It's come up a ton recently because there's just so many things coming out. And it's not, you know, we're not going to talk about AI today or anything like that. But that, you know, that's on fast forward now with kids using AI to help them with write papers or using celebrities or whomever using AI to fake pictures online that people are at certain events that really aren't there. And just different ways that social media and technology is being used, overused. I don't know.
Well, I would say it's probably being overused, but there's always a balance. It's something that, you know, I'm in obviously a very specialized setting, but even my students who are, you know, junior high age and have, you know, some social competency challenges are getting together via the, you know, virtual world after school, and they may be texting each other, they're finding videos that they're sharing, or they're making videos and teasing and possibly bullying other students in their classroom and then having those conversations with each other and then bringing it to school. And again, these are students that don't have a lot of that social competency to be able to understand where things get, you know, really dicey for their friends and then for kids that maybe are just getting picked on and they're not taking that perspective of what it feels like to be the kid that's getting teased. And I'm not sure all the time that parents really fully grasp how savvy these kids can be with their phones and with their connection to the internet. So there's a lot that still needs to be done as far as even just monitoring them outside of school. And it's hard because our jobs seemingly should end when the school day ends, but we all know that that's not the case. And how are we getting parents on board and caregivers to also be on our team for supporting kids to be making good choices and learning the safety and the, you know, again, the social piece of it.
Yeah. And I think it does run in quite a bit. It overlaps, especially at the middle high school, probably earlier now at this point in time. But like, I just feel like a lot of weekends we're getting, you know, on a Monday, a call from a parent saying, you know, this happened over the weekend where someone showed a picture of this. And while there is some protection and safety that you have put into place in the school day, at what point is it the school's responsibility to discipline, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word, or, you know, there's the restorative piece of things, but also when does that, where does the responsibility lie, and how do you collaborate or partner with parents to hold both the school and the family accountable?
Well, and especially if it's happening outside of school, and then there you're finding out about it in school, and all the parties involved are, I mean, you know, it's the case that you can have kids that are like, oh, I posted something you sent me on TikTok. Like, you sent me a video of you doing something maybe borderline weird. And I don't know, another, you know, is it sexual in nature? Is it something that's going to upset a large group of people? You sent that to me and I put it on TikTok and now everybody sees it. And now it's coming into school because that's where kids are talking about it. And how do you get the parent involved with that situation where it's coming out in school and now you're dealing with it there? It's just very, you know, tricky to navigate.
Well, and I've been seeing more and more, actually, a lot of schools, because we saw, or I've seen over the past few years that I've been in the public school setting, a lot of kids recording things in the bathroom or, you know, on school grounds and then posting it. And then that happens too. So there's that side of it. And I've seen a lot of schools from a therapeutic setting or a very small school all the way to some high schools that are now getting approval to buy these like bags that, for those of you, I think they're called like Jarbos. I don't know. That name is completely wrong. I should have Googled it first, but it's like, if you go to a comedy show and they don't want it, it's like a Netflix special and they don't want it to be posted anywhere. They take your phones and they put it in this bag, and you can only like, if you need to go like check it, you keep it with you all day. But if you want to go check it, you have to go get it unlocked by someone. And then you can check it, put it back in. So I think they're trying to do that to mitigate some of the risk of phones during the school day, which I think in theory is a great idea. And I think a lot of schools will be on board with it. I'm just interested to see, like, at the end of the day, how do you get 700 phones out of these individual bags?
Well, and like, we keep our students' phones safely locked away all day long, and it's still a problem. So it's just, there's so many pieces to it. And I mean, we're not going to remove the phone from these kids. Like, this is what they're focused on. This is what everyone else is doing. They're going to do it. I do feel like a lot of our parents are not fully aware of how much they're accessing. And I have students who come in scripting videos, and they're clearly videos that they've accessed without a parent supervising. And now they have no idea what to make of the words and the images and what they're talking about, what they've seen. And they're spewing this out in a classroom setting. And so it's just, it's working with the parents to find a balance. And I think that, and caregivers, it's just really challenging. I don't envy that situation, because I think kids become super fixated on, as I've seen a lot, on their tech, in either their personal tech or tech in school. They want to earn technology when they cash in for something. They want, you know, the only way to seemingly keep their attention with academics is to work in a tech piece to it. But some of that comes down to teaching and creative teaching. And I think when you can make things multi-sensory and multimodal, you can kind of pull their interest back to something that's not tech oriented. But I think oftentimes it's like they're that, I call it the TikTok generation of like, what's next? What's next? What's next? Like this idea that you can just scroll through life so quickly. Like, I don't like this, change it. It's like, no, this is just what we're doing today. We're not changing it. We're not moving to something else because you don't like this option. And I think that's been baked into it as well.
When I think there's some, you know, I've seen friends who have children who, some of them limit screen time and with like significant restrictions. Some of them limit screen time with less restrictions. Some of them don't limit screen time, but offer more appealing alternatives to help that student, that kid, build independence on making those decisions himself. So that way he knows, you know, that yes, technology is available, but there are other options, and trying to create ways where he can be independent, not feel bored, and automatically direct himself to technology. And then I have parents who have really strict parameters around screen time, and those kids will not get off during their screen time, and there's no alternative. There's no bribery or like incentive to motivate them to get off. So it's like there's just this balance, and I feel like with technology happening so fast, and really like we're also trying to catch up as adults. And so imagining these kids who are already ahead of the game because they're in it.
Well, they're also the generation that has been just had tech all their whole lives. They've never not had that. They've never not had it.
And a lot of people are saying, I mean, there's a lot of research, I should say, being done around the increase in anxiety with the graduating generation because they've had technology and access to technology. And I think people have been navigating how to incorporate technology into their teaching or into their home life. And this is the first generation where parents are going with kids to interviews because they're so anxious, or like, you know, calling the college because they got a bad grade, and these kids are adults, and you're supposed to be sort of building that independence. And they're correlating all of this to this anxiety and this fear of being out on your own, I guess, with technology.
Well, and I mean, dare I speak to my much younger workforce colleagues who seem to be attached to their phones all day long, whether it's an AirPod in their ear, or they're just constantly looking at their phone, and that anxiety. I think the anxiety is multifaceted. I think one aspect of the anxiety is missing out. You know, it could be that. It could be what's happening that I'm not up to date on, because again, like we're talking about, it's moving at the speed of light. What don't I know? What am I not a part of? But maybe it's also just a coping. It's like a security blanket. Like, I just need to have this and look at it because I don't know what to do with myself. Socially, I'm not sure what to do. I mean, I'll be very candid and say I struggle with adults that do this in a school setting, because you're here to be with kids, especially really vulnerable ones. My hope would be that you could put your phone down and engage with the students instead of being checking your phone. And the policy that we try to create around that doesn't always get upheld, unfortunately, by the people that are, you know, looking at their phones. And it's hard because as other adults, you know, you don't want to have to tell adults like, we're going to lock your phone up all day. We're not going to let you access the phone. You can have it once at a break and once when you get it back at the end of the day. We do that with our students. We shouldn't have to do that with our coworkers, but I think that anxiety is just prevalent in many facets of the use of technology.
The always being available thing, yes, too. Like, it's funny, as you're talking, I'm thinking through, like, when I'm at work, I forget my phone most of the day. Like, I'm running meeting to meeting all day, and I'll realize 3 hours later, I'm like, oh crap, I never have my phone. And I'll get back to 4 or 5 work texts, which this is my personal phone. So it's like, even then, I'm like, all right, where's the limit there? But that's another day. Like, it's like, wow, we are all so reliant on each other having technology. Uh-huh. I went to a concert last night, and there was a group in front of me who literally the whole show, every time a song came on, they were FaceTiming someone else, taking pictures. Like, I almost felt like, are you even enjoying?
Right. You can't immerse yourself into anything anymore. Yeah.
What's going on in front of you? And so to your point about the examples of adults and like setting those examples, if you're an adult who is on their phone all the time, what are you teaching your students?
Right. Well, and I think, you know, especially for my vulnerable kids who have lots of trauma and other such things, like to have someone in showing you basically by this disinterest in you and their over interest in the phone, that they're just not interested in what you're doing, but they're also showing you, well, this is how you deal. You know, this is how you cope. You're in your phone, you're on your phone. This is what people do. You're the role model, and you're role modeling that you're attached to this device and you don't want to part with it. And I think showing by you engaging and sharing other types of activities that you enjoy doing and participating with kids in those activities is creating that a sense of what the world is around this. We're not going to get rid of it. We're not going to, you know, put it aside.
It
has a lot of great uses. But I think we have become so reliant on it, and kids are so reliant on that, and that need to sort of be stimulated by this all day long. and it and into the night, and then we can have a whole topic about the talk about getting any sleep. Every, you know, kids coming in saying, "I was up playing a video games till video games till 3 a.m.
Yeah, and I also like we had talked while we were prepping that, you know, at times your classroom feels chaotic, and so you have to throw a video on mm-hmm. or give them technology if you have access to that. And I think about these large public school classroom sizes. If I'm trying to work with one group, I need to keep this other group entertained, and why every available supplemental material is all online. You do an online activity like activity like Lexia, or like something like that, where it's like, oh, you can go on Lexia, collect data for 10 minutes and I have it. But it's like, is that helpful? Are we what's the word? Like when you like, I don't know, whatever. Are you like pushing the narrative of the use of technology? I think the hard part is too, is that there are some really positive ways that technology has really helped our students, especially our students with disabilities or students who have like mobility issues mm-hmm. with like those motorized wheelchairs, people that cannot talk at all, using their eyes to point to letters. Like there's just so many benefits to it. And it's really hard to...
Well, what you're speaking of is assistive technology.
Yes.
Which, I'm not that it's not all technology, but...
Yeah.
The assistive technology game has been going strong for a long time and is, you know, wonderful. I mean, the adaptations, modifications, programs, what they come up with for especially people with physical disabilities is mind-blowing. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think there... So would you consider something like speech-to-text?
Assistive tech, yes.
Assistive tech, yeah. Okay. So would you... So... What I guess that is really one of the things, but I'm trying to think of, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. What about games that you play with kids? Like I think when I used to teach executive functioning, for example, I used to bring in Roblox because there was a really fun pizzeria game. Sometimes it was the ice cream area or the hamburgeria. Yeah. They've really expanded on Roblox.
The areas. Yeah.
But it helped teach step-by-step instructions and reiterate that. And it was obviously a limited time, but kids were engaged and it helped teach some of that.
I'm going to share it out. Can I share it out?
Yeah.
It's Friv, F-R-I-V, for school.com. As an OT, I am obsessed with this website. There are so many good games on there, from executive functioning, perceptual, problem solving, strategizing, wonderful, wonderful games, and kids are super engaged with it. This part is where I become like, I geek out over the idea of how you could just go online and like plug in this website and find a game that's really interactive and has so much going on, and you're not paying for it. You don't need a special system for it, a gaming system. You just can go onto that. That is one of my favorites. And I think that has enhanced my work with students. So I think this is where that positive balance comes in. I mean, especially if it's a 30-minute session, being able to find a website that they may be engaged with to work on the skills. And quite interestingly too, a lot of my students don't know how to use a mouse. So being able to learn how to do that bilaterally, to, you know, work the mouse, work the keyboard. So I think that I enjoy mixing that in with other hands-on things as well. And it's really motivating for kids to be able to participate in that. And so I'm a big fan of those type of websites.
With limitations.
Well, yeah. And I'm also monitoring what they're doing. Yeah. And I always, and even when kids ask to show me something online, my first question is always, is this expected for school? Is what you're choosing going to be, you know, expected? Shout out Michelle Garcia Winner for the social thinking language, expected, unexpected. But I always try to frame it as like, this is school. Maybe what you're allowed to do at home is different, but here we're looking at some different rules around that.
So where, you know, as far as like tips for the trade, I feel like I run into this a lot in like the public school setting, because some teachers feel like the assistive tech piece, not the reiteration of skills piece through that use, is cheating, or is, you know, they can't use that computer in my classroom. And it's like, well, they need the speech to text, or they need the typing instead of the handwriting. So one, where's the maturity?
Yeah.
And where do you start thinking about that? And I think from an IEP perspective, special educators, this is something I think we run into all the time in IEP meetings, is at what point as an OT or as a writing goal or anything that's, you know, and I'm being very specific to this area because I feel like it's the most concrete one that we run into in a lot of meetings around telling parents at what point should we stop thinking about writing so much?
Well, I say this, I've said it 1,000 times. It's content. When do you get to the point where you're focused on content and getting kids to synthesize their thoughts and put that content, you know, understanding what they're learning, synthesizing it, making sense of it, and producing it. And if you can do that fluidly in any manner of speaking, you know, whether it's tech, whether it's writing, whether it's whatever it is that enables you to be independent and get that content out into the world for other people to understand it, that's what we're going for. It's that simple.
Some teachers would say that starts as early as first or second grade.
Agreed. And that's so, something that it used to be, you know, a lot of years ago, it was, well, they're only 7 or 8. We should really be working on handwriting. Or they're 9 or 10. I don't want to give up on handwriting. Yes, understood. But really, we're focused on content and on understanding how to get ideas out there. And how to kind of edit and shape your ideas to make them really user-friendly for people that are reading your work.
It'd be helpful to have a guide of, like, when the threshold... Because, you know, I get a lot of pushback from educators and parents that say, like, well, they're still making progress in their writing, so why wouldn't we continue to have them write? And why wouldn't we continue to push that envelope? And content piece is worth a discussion, but sometimes that they don't.
You can also walk and chew gum at the same time. Nobody said you can't work on both things. So maybe you're working on the writing piece, the handwriting piece, or the physical writing piece for shorter things, and you're working on longer assignments are getting edited through and worked on through other tech. I mean, it's just the way things are moving. So I think, and I get it, and I understand there are teachers really dialed into, like, this is the skill I want them to work on, and I'm not really wanting to move far from that, but this is happening whether we choose to want it to happen or not. So we need to find a way to accommodate the tech aspect. What do you feel about rewarding kids with tech when they've had a successful day, block in class, you know?
It's so kid dependent. I've heard a lot of times, I feel like there's a balance. You can't have that as an option every day. I know this is old school. Mm-hmm. When I only had 2 computers in my class that were shareable for the whole room.
And we had the computer lab.
And we had the computer lab.
Which you got once a week, maybe.
But that was it. It was like, all right, you can turn your tickets. You have to have, like, the most perfect day to be able to even have an option for this. But once you use it, if it's on a Monday, you don't have that option again. We have different rewards that you can access at different times. And honestly, I feel like there's this social component that kids don't even know how much they enjoy with adults, I feel like, a lot of times. And so...
Or other kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you build in that social component and they are engaged in it...
And it builds self-esteem. Yeah. It should build more self-esteem, we would like to believe, than I just got the high score on, you know...
Right.
Fortnite. That doesn't make any sense that I purposely know that, but I just thought that would be funny to say.
Okay. I don't know. I don't think many people listening to this know Fortnite. They're like, I don't know. My kids play, but
again, to talk about the video game is more like, feels, it's almost like that instant gratification versus building up over time the self-esteem of having a connection with other people about topics and interests and activities that don't relate to technology. Yeah.
But I do think there's a time and a place. And if you have kids really struggling and that's what works for them and you have a plan of, I was talking about this for one-to-ones the other day, but like if you're always thinking about a plan of fading or a plan of building an independence, a plan of generalization, I think you can put anything could be reasonably put into place with that thought process of what is this going to look like at the end of the year?
Yeah.
So.
Agreed.
All right, so we're changing it up. In the past, those of you, our faithful listeners, who are very excited for this episode to come out, we had typically for a while done Would You Rather. Before that, I don't remember what we did when we first started, but we have a new segment of our podcast called Reading Special Ed Reviews. And today, Raleigh is going to read a review about the Alpha Smart. For those of you who have never heard of the Alpha Smart, it's a little word processor with, like, literally the smallest... Google it, with the smallest thing on it, so you can only see 2 lines of your typing at a time. Mm-hmm.
And you had to plug it in to print it, anything. Yeah. So you had to make sure that you had your connection, you know, your wire there, your cord. I don't even know if it's a USB. Yeah. Maybe it was a USB. You had to plug it in and print it on the printer.
But if you like wrote something two paragraphs before, it really wasn't useful for long-term assignment.
No,
you Because you'd be like scrolling up like, trying to figure out, but you could only see one line at a time, two lines at a time. It was
But
nuts.
It had its purpose. And in fact, I used them often when I first started working with kids in the setting that I'm in now. So this review comes from August 20th, 2019. So not all that long ago, but this review is approximately 10 to 12 paragraphs long. I'm not going to read all of them, but I will say the screen is small, three lines. Its capabilities are limited. It might have some other things on it, spell check, and just to note, it's not, spell check is not spelled correctly, but none of that matters. What's important is I can sit anymore, tote this durable plastic thing, stuff it any kind of sack, not worry about it. And when I want to write, I can fire it up.
Boots, it is durable.
Boots instantly and free write to my heart's content. That's what this is for. You cannot really edit on this or do much else. If you know what free writing is, you know the score. It's a way of getting your thoughts down. It's like sitting down at a piano and just tickling the keys, but recording your keystrokes. There's no way to really self-edit and type at the same time. The screen is too small. I can't really see what I just typed out, but that's helpful to me to keep out the temptation to try to edit as I write, which stops me up. Let's scroll down a little bit. Oh, and the battery lasts. I've had this thing for months and it's still going strong. I see it's kind of like a typewriter, not a modern one, but something from the 90s or 2000s that still works, will work, and helps me do what I need to do. The perfect tool. The actual keyboard is fine. Maybe not fancy. Clickety-clack, but it works. It's not annoying. I've definitely used worse.
Clickety-clack.
And we're going to sum it up with, you can go on one of these projects, fundraising sites, and find a more modern version of this for $500. In parentheses, the quote free write traveler, which is kind of cool, now at $369. This does what that does, but it's like $30. I bought two of these. I took it on a trip to Chicago. I stuffed it in my suitcase, then a beach bag. I didn't put it in a special case. I popped it out whenever I wanted to put something down. It worked. I've dropped it a couple times so far. It's fine. I'm sure I could break it if I ran over it. But if middle schoolers in the late 90s couldn't break this, it ain't breaking. Oh, Neo. And this person gave it 5 out of 5.
5 stars.
5 out of 5.
5 stars.
Wonderful.
I mean, it was a 5-star tool, and I highly recommend you look it up. And if you need something useful for your classroom, maybe do some sort of fundraiser for a few Alpha Smarts.
I'm kind of wishing now that I did not get rid of my Alpha Smarts.
No, you do like organization.
I don't like clutter.
Well, thank you so much for listening. We're excited to be back and to talk topic special ed and different reviews. I'm very excited. We may do a whole episode on it for all we know. So we appreciate you listening and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Oh, wait, where can they find us, Danielle?
Oh, you can find us on any of our social media sites. They're back up and running. Well, maybe not Facebook. I definitely got hacked, but so that may be a restart. But Instagram, LinkedIn. We also have our Gmail account at unstuckpodcast1@gmail.com. So if you want to email us with ideas or thoughts, or if you want to join our podcast because you have great ideas, we'll be looking to do some more interviewing as well.
All right, now that's all.
Now
we can leave.
Now we can say goodbye. Bye.